I don't know exactly how it works, but it seems that to get butter, you need milk, and to get milk, you need cows. Where are your cows? You don't seem to have many cows.
Perhaps if you hadn't slaughtered our cows.
Ah, yes, we did, didn't we? But then we needed meat for our soldiers.
You don't get very good meat from milk cows.
No. Well, as I said, I don't know about such things. Our Führer has everything worked out. But now I want you to see something really special. My friends, this is meat. Not so much, but real meat. There. Looks good, huh? You don't say anything. Don't you like it?
It looks like beef. Fresh, too. I wonder how many Greeks have meat on their table tonight.
Well, you will have it. It's a present. For Mrs. Nikolidis, the butter and the potatoes. And for you, Mr. Nikolidis, the meat. However, we will not be selfish, huh? We will all share it together. German and Greek, we will sit down at the same table and share the same food, huh?
Anna!
You know, it's all right here. I'm not complaining, but usually we sit at the table so silent. That's not good for the digestion. Perhaps in the future...
Did you call me?
Anna, you will cook these things for dinner.
Bless my soul, man. That's not meat.
Meat, potatoes, and butter, Anna.
Anna, you will serve butter with the potatoes, huh? Not olive oil. I'm sick of rancid olive oil. I may bring you more meat later on. Perhaps I'll teach you to make Zaubraten, huh?
Take the things into the kitchen, Anna. Cook the meat, as Herr Müller says.
Yes, ma'am.
You see, we Germans really want to be friends with you. If only you'll give us a chance. Tonight we'll have a good meal and talk, huh? We'll be here a long time. Why shouldn't we get to know each other better? That's more like it. Smells good, huh, Mr. Nikolidis? That's meat. Wait till you taste it.
Anna, put the dish in front of Herr Müller.
Yeah, everyone will get a fair share. I see you've also cooked the carrots and artichoke. I don't think we'll have enough without that. Take it back to the kitchen.
Let me have it, Anna.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you want with that? Wait till you taste this. Let me have your plate, Mrs. Nikolidis.
Thank you, Herr Müller. I think I'll have enough with the artichoke.
Huh? What? You don't want any meat? I see what it is. You think I'm just teasing you. You're wrong. I really mean to share it with you. Don't let's have any formality. Let me have your plate. You too, Mr. Nikolidis.
Thank you, but I think I prefer artichokes, too.
What's the matter with you two? Have you gone crazy? You can't live on that mess. Don't you want some real food?
Oh, I'd like some very much. But only if the rest of our countrymen are getting it, too.
In August 1942, more than a year after the Germans had permitted the Italians to come in and police the country, the Italian command in Greece issued this private warning to the men of the occupation forces.
Do not deceive yourselves into believing the population is not deeply hostile to you, even though it is quiet. Unknown to you, there exists a dark organization ready to take you unaware. An organization well armed and trained in irregular warfare, composed of men who will stop at nothing. They act not only against lonely sentries, but against military garrisons of superior strength.
In Greece today, the guerrillas hold the mountains despite all attempts of the invaders to crush them. Men like Duras, Papas, Papa Nicholas, and General Mandakis command patriot armies which are made of men from every walk of life. They operate in bands of from 50 up to thousands. They dynamite bridges, derail trains, send trucks crashing into ravines, and pounce on lonely enemy outposts. Major Monocuro is symbolic of the spirit of the Greek guerrillas. He has a band of only 50 men who have their headquarters near Patras. In Patras itself, the Germans had set up what they called a German club in the most comfortable house in town. To one side of the doorway, they had set up a large bronze tablet inscribed with the name of the club. Not to be outdone, the Italians took the second best house for their Italian club, and they too set up their bronze tablet. One night, Major Monocuro set out to visit these clubs.
This is an expedition after my own heart. If we can bring this off, we can do anything.
You think we're strong enough, Major? We've only 25 men in each party.
Surprise will reinforce us. If everything turns out according to plan, Alexandra will reach the Italian club about the time we reach the German.
Here comes one of the scouts.
Fine.
Take to report, Major.
Go on, let's hear it. How near did you get?
Right to the doors. They've got girls there, too. Huh? They're dancing and kicking up such a row you could set off an artillery barrage without being hurt.
That's a bit of luck. Good work, Leon. Yeah. We'll teach them a few new steps before the night's out.
Lights in every window.
I want every bullet to meet a Nazi. All right. Forward! Never was a better night's work. Did any of your Italians get away, Alexandra?
Not one.
We collected dues from all our club members, too. A wonderful night's work. Oh, Alexandra, did you forget?
No, Major. Here it is. The bronze tablet.
Excellent. Here's the German tablet. German club, Italian club. Look, Alexandra, the Italian lettering is much more artistic than the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
This is fine bronze.
They will make good souvenirs, eh, Major? Will you put them up somewhere?
I have the place all picked out. Right here. You and I will stop and put them up. Do you see that gate? We will mount one on each side.
Well, this place looks familiar. What is it?
The new Italian-German club. The Patras Cemetery.
The story of the miracle in Hellas, the splendid and unflinching resistance of Greece and its people, is the ageless story of humanity, of its hope and faith. If in the Greek people today there remains something of the fire and zeal that the world has long admired in ancient Hellas, it is a symbol carried through the centuries of the immortal structure of the human spirit.
Thank you, Betty Wasson. And now, here is Matthew Gordon, Chief of the Foreign Service Division of the Office of War Information, with his weekly report on current enemy activities. We take you to Washington and Matthew Gordon.
The story of Greek resistance, which we just heard, in a sense underscores the news of today. For it was fascist Italy which delivered the military assault on Greece, but got pummeled until the Nazis came in to help them occupy the country. Today, the fascists in Italy, who tried to increase their holdings at the expense of neighboring countries, are doing their best to hang on at the expense of their own people. As we moved forward in Sicily, we coordinated our military arm with our news arm. Proclamations, leaflets, radio. We got our story into Italy. The fascists couldn't stop that, so they did their best to ridicule our story. Leaflets containing the message of President Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill poured down on Italy. The next morning, said a Stockholm newspaper, the fascist propagandists rushed into print with their own leaflets, and this is what the fascists said. quote. Italians, read the enemy's leaflets. We appeal to you to do this mean act. Enemy bombs try to kill you. Leaflets dishonor you. Bombs desire your physical death. Leaflets, your moral death. End of quotation. That's what the Italian fascists told their own people as they fought to keep a grip on these people. One of the standard practices of Nazi and fascist propagandists, and the Japanese too, is to use propaganda in an effort to impede military action by our side against them. More than a year ago, when British planes attacked factories working for the Nazis in the suburbs of Paris, the Nazis, aided by Vichy, pumped out stories of British air terror and how civilians had been attacked, and so on. Within the last few months, as the air blows on Nazi and fascist military targets, on factories and railways working for the enemy, as these blows got heavier, the Nazi and fascist propagandists began to work harder and harder to get out more and more stories of terror and gangsterism, telling us what bad people we were to destroy culture, we were to destroy culture, we were to destroy culture, and so forth. They invented atrocity stories of one kind and another. The way they told it, we never hit anything of military importance. Everywhere in Nazi Germany, in occupied France and elsewhere, there were only cultural objects. In telling this story to the people of their own and the occupied countries, the Nazis and fascists were trying to whip up hatred against us and our allies. In sending out this type of story to the people of America and Britain, the Nazis and fascists were trying to appeal to our normal humane instincts to get us and the British people to think and say that maybe we ought to cut down our bombings. The Nazis and fascists would like that very much. They could make more guns and planes and tanks to use against us. So they sold the air terror stories for very practical reasons. This despite the fact that the Nazis had used terror as a weapon, had bombed cities, and then put out stories of the great destruction they had caused and the greater destruction they would cause. All this in an effort to scare us and our friends. You remember their lurid accounts. But now it was different. And so now the Nazis and the fascists were the defenders of culture. This week, against that background, as our bombers went on their mission to bomb military objectives in Rome, to destroy railway yards through which enemy supplies and troops moved, Allied headquarters warned that the enemy would make all efforts to propagandize on the raid. And the enemy did. All out. They poured it on and still are right now. The Japanese were likewise outraged. We will hear more of this type of enemy propaganda in connection with other raids upon other parts of Europe. One clear rule is this, that everything the enemy propagandists put out is designed to aid them and hurt us. The same rule holds for all types of enemy propaganda. For instance, all those stories which the Nazis put out about the fortress Europe, how impossible it is to invade Europe, and so forth. The Italians once put out stories, too, saying that Sicily was impregnable, just was impregnable. 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 Just couldn't be. Turn you now to New York.
We wish to thank Betty Watson for her appearance tonight. Our thanks to Nathan Van Cleve, who composed the music and conducted the orchestra. This program was written by Leopold Proser. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Telford. The following actors participated in this program: Frank Gallup, Dorothy Lowell, Irene Hubbard, Jay Meredith, Sam Wanamaker, Walter Vaughn, Roger DeCoven, Michael Fitzmaurice, and Theo Getz. This program has been the 62nd in a series, which is presented each week at this time over most of these stations by the United States government, in cooperation with WOR and the Mutual Network. This is Mutual. This is Mutual. This is Mutual.